Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, who has served as mayor since 2010 after a seven-year stint on the Common Council. Miner is co-chair of the New York State Democratic Party. Mayor Miner, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Hey, how hard is it to run a city these days?
I think it's always been difficult to run a city, but it's particularly difficult now with the financial challenges that all cities across the country are facing. It makes it very hard to muster the resources to try to solve the kind of problems that find themselves arising in cities these days.
Anything in particular that gets your goat?
Well, look, you know, public safety is a preeminent service that we provide. And so when we have to look at cutting police, cutting fire, cutting teachers, those are three of our most expensive, most highly skilled employees and provide services that people expect and need for a community. And that's what we are now getting to the point where that's what we're looking at having to cut.
So what's made it so difficult? Is it the tax cap?
Well, it's pensions and health care. Those two things have been driving cities, particularly Syracuse, which I'm obviously the most familiar with, right off the cliff. The fall that the stock market took in the 2000s, coupled with the pension enhancements that the state legislature voted for unanimously, I might add, and given the kind of benefits that some public sector unions have that private sector unions don't have, like compulsory binding interest arbitration, has really put the ability to bargain meaningfully out of whack.
And what is compulsory binding arbitration?
Well, unlike in the private sector, when you bargain, you have to come to an agreement, and there's a process for that. In the public sector, with certain employees who New York State has said that it is not in the public interest to strike, so therefore it's illegal for teachers and police officers and firemen to strike, the exchange that they got was that because they can't strike, they can have a neutral third-party arbitrator step in and award a contract. And what has happened is that effectively those with police and fire, which I'm more familiar with, they overwhelmingly go to compulsory binding interest arbitration because they always get a better deal than they're going to get with the city. And so there's really no incentive to bargain meaningfully. And on top of that, interest arbitrators never really look at work rules. And some of the things that we're talking about driving cities that need to change are work rules. Overtime, for example, access to overtime, secondary employment, things of those nature. And we won't be able to change those or adjust those work rules until we have a change in compulsory binding interest arbitration.
Now, you've implied, I think, that the legislature is in the palm of the unions. Is that right?
I have not implied that at all.
In fact,
just the opposite. What I've said is that I think that we need to have a discussion as a state and have all municipalities and unions and business groups and the state government get around a table to talk about this before disaster strikes. And I can tell you, disaster is striking in Detroit, disaster is striking in Harrisburg and Scranton and San Bernardino, California. It is all around us, and it's coming towards us in the state of New York. And we have an obligation. People elected us to be leaders to prevent the kind of hardship that I see right on the horizon.
So you've had a little tiff with the governor. Perhaps you could tell us how it started and whether it's been overblown or what the implications are.
Well, you know, I have spoken publicly and privately, I've been very consistent since I became mayor about the fiscal crisis that is impacting cities. And it's been a process in talking to people about it, first alerting them to it, and then talking about the causes, and then talking about the fact of what is going to happen to that, and also saying that it doesn't just impact cities, it impacts towns and villages and counties. And so while I've been very consistent and communicative about this problem, there's been a sort of sense, I think, that people would rather have somebody else start the discussion or somebody else talk about it. And the governor has proven himself to be a leader who understands problems, who puts his well-earned political capital towards solving problems. And this is an opportunity for the governor to solve a problem that's going to impact a vast majority of New Yorkers.
But, Mayor, I don't think everybody understands what the substantive difference is. Could you go into that?
Well, I think the substantive difference is that what I have asked the governor and folks from the state to do is to convene a meeting or a series of meetings to have a discussion about how we can, in a systemic and responsible way, solve the problem that is impacting municipalities. In the governor's own budget, they define 437 municipalities that are under fiscal distress. We can't, as a state, have 437 municipalities go belly up or go into a financial control board. It's going to impact the kind of services that New Yorkers get, the most important and, I think, basic services that New Yorkers expect. As I talked about it, police, it's fires, it's teachers, it's DPW, it's snowplows, it's roads, it's water. We know that that's where it's going to be impacted, and we need statewide leadership to convene this meeting and discussion so that we can try to address the drivers, look for ideas, and move forward as a state to prevent people from feeling these hardships in their community.
I just want to go back to this concept of the tax cap. It seems to me when you have a tax cap on communities and their ability to raise the money they need to run the government, the police, the fire, all the things you're talking about, that has got to be part of the problem.
Well, let me give you an example in Syracuse. It is not part of the problem in Syracuse because 50% of our property is off the tax rolls. And the remaining 50% that is on the tax rolls is owned by some of the poorest people in New York State. So you can't continue to tax them to pay for these benefits that are outstripping them. Now, in other municipalities, the ratio is different. So is the property tax cap something that needs to be addressed? I think it's part of a discussion, but it is not by far the only thing that needs to be addressed, and it is not what has driven municipalities, in my case, Syracuse in particular, to this financial crisis. It's, as I said, it's pensions, it's health care, it's all of these drivers that were put into place largely by the state, but people of goodwill, I think, for the most part, that have now, they didn't understand the implications of that, and now we have these expenses that are unmanageable, we can't control, and we have cut and cut and cut, and now we're looking at having to cut back services.
Okay, so you mentioned something which I'm fascinated by as an academic myself, and that is that half of the properties are off the tax rolls. Is this because of Syracuse University?
Not just Syracuse University, but in upstate in particular, the cities form the basis and the focus of the surrounding regions. So in Syracuse, we are the center for economic development, for business development, for healthcare, for government, for recreation. So and in upstate, that's very similar across the way. So what you find is your colleges, your hospitals, your government buildings are all located in the city because that's where everybody revolves around it. So, which is another point, Alan, if you allow the city of Syracuse to crumble, then we're never going to have economic development in central New York. It doesn't just impact the city of Syracuse, it impacts Onondaga County and the 7 to 12 county region that counts on Syracuse to be the economic driver, the recreational driver, the governmental driver, the healthcare driver, all of those things.
So is there a way around that? In other words, is there a way to make the not-for-profits pay?
Well, in other states that they have instituted things called impact fees, and the concept is really pretty simple. If you are utilizing services from the government, you should pay for those services. And now how you implement that concept is always where it gets interesting. But because of the way that the state has construed its laws, we in Syracuse can't pass impact fees. The state says you're not allowed to do that. So this is another area where we could have a really full-throated discussion about, is it appropriate that hospitals and colleges, which are, you know, need police and fire and DPW, sure, aren't paying for those services?
Let me move to a different area. You have an op-ed in the New York Times, February 13, 2013, Cuomo to Cities Just Borrow by Stephanie Miner. Give us a synopsis of what you wrote.
Well, what I talked about is the fiscal crisis impacting cities, and that I think in the governor's budget, and there's an acknowledgement that there is a fiscal crisis impacting municipalities across New York State, and one of the solutions proposed was the, what's come to be known as the pension smoothing program. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at that, and after some analysis and continued analysis, what I found was it amounted to a borrowing. It was borrowing to get through the next 4 years, and then the next 10 years, this huge amount of money would come due. And what we've seen in other places, in particular Harrisburg and Scranton, is that when you're financing liabilities that you know are going to come due, you end up with these huge bills that eventually the government can't pay. And while I didn't say it in the New York Times, I have said it in other places, which is when you look at this program, for the next 4 years, it looks like it gives municipalities great relief. Now, I'm not going to be mayor 5 years from today if I'm fortunate enough to be reelected. There's a term limit in Syracuse. But I'm still going to be part of Syracuse, and I can't in good conscience saddle the people of this community with a debt that I don't think they'll be able to pay just to get through the next 4 years. And I don't think that that's responsible governing. If we know that this is a problem coming, or we're in the midst of a problem, let's try to solve it, not for the next 12 months or the next year. Let's try to solve it for the next 4 years and 5 years.
I quote you, instead, it would let municipalities push payment of today's ballooning pension costs into the future in what amounts to an accounting gimmick. Ouch. So what happens is he's saying, okay, because we're going to make reforms in the pension system, you borrow now, and by the time you have to pay it off, things will be a lot better. You don't believe that?
I don't. And the analysis that my budget people have put together and the analysis that other folks have put together shows that not to be true, that in 4 or 5 years and 10 years, that the amount that the taxpayers of the city of Syracuse will have to be will be a huge ballooning payment. And that's based on the numbers that the budget folks put into the actual budget. So they have the assumptions of 7.5% interest rate return, which a lot of professionals say is not a responsible assumption. And I would also say, I know as mayor of the city, when we get our pension bills, it's been a long time since the pension fund made 7.5% return.
I know that they dispatched the lieutenant governor to go and talk to you about this, mayor. Have you talked to the governor himself about this?
I have not. But, you know, the governor and the governor's people, as I said in the beginning, this has been a long-standing dialogue, both publicly and privately and back and forth. So I expect that there will be discussions. But frankly, yeah, sure. I hope that there will be discussions because you can't – this is a problem that's not going away.
Now, complicating all of this is the fact that when I introduced you, I said that you were co-chair of the New York State Democratic Party. What do you do as a co-chair of the New York State Democratic Party? Is that a job or is it just honorific?
It depends on the time of the year and the election cycle. The closer it is to election cycles, the more active I am. But generally speaking, I am called to give speeches and help get Democrats elected.
Are you finding that you're being called to give fewer speeches now that you've had this disagreement with the governor?
Well, no, but it's obviously we just got through a very important election cycle, and so things have really slowed down in the political realm.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess what I want to know, because, you know, I've had to do with the governor from time to time, and I know that control is his long suit. So here you are, co-chair, mayor of an important city. You have a major policy disagreement with the governor. And I guess what I want to know is, what does that feel like? I mean, is there major pushback? I mean, what do you do? I wouldn't want to be sitting where you're sitting.
Well, One of the luxuries of being mayor of an upstate city is that you get used to having disagreements with people and you get used to taking tough stands, because you couldn't be mayor of any city in these days and times and find that uncomfortable. But I think that this is an important issue for the people of the city of Syracuse and also for the state of New York. I have a role to play. I have a voice. And in general, I think democracy is better the more voices you have and the more people who stand up and issue an opinion.
You're obviously very bright, very articulate. And
I'm sure, Ellen, that there, by the way, that there are people who disagree with both of those
that's
things.
That's exactly what
you're very nice. You're very nice to say so. Thank you.
Believe me, I talk to a lot of people, and you're very bright and you're very articulate. Okay, so what I want to know now is, what do you do about all of this? I mean, are you political in that you go back to your audience, your constituents, and say, what do you think about what I'm saying? Or as Ed Koch used to say, how am I doing? Do you do that?
Actually, the folks of Syracuse and of Central New York have been coming to me, and they have been almost universally positive in their response. Again, as I've said, this is not a new issue for me. I've been talking about this since January of 2010 and throwing up PowerPoints and charts and talking about trends and explaining this. So the people of Syracuse and Central New York are used to me talking about this and explaining why the expenses that we can manage, we have managed, and yet so many of our drivers are unmanageable expenses and we need assistance and help from the state. So I'm going to continue to talk about this and continue to ring the bell to say this is a crisis that's happening. And every day that goes by that we don't address it is a day closer to this crisis happening. I mean, today, the comptroller is putting out reports on Yonkers and Syracuse, and I think other cities as well.
I'm glad you mentioned the comptroller. He does seem to be an ally of yours in this fight, doesn't he?
You know, I don't know if I wouldn't call this a fight. I call it a policy disagreement,
okay.
And I'm not sure that I would call him.
Let me amend that. He does seem to be an ally of yours in this policy disagreement.
Well, I think he is an ally, and I think in terms, particularly in terms of, you know, the old saying about you can argue policies, but you can't disagree with facts. The facts here are very, very straightforward. Municipalities have systemic challenges, and they are in fiscal crisis. When you look at the facts, and as the comptroller's job is to look at the facts, and he is doing that, and he is alerting the public and New York City at large about this. And it's our job as elected leaders and policyholders to say, okay, we have this problem. Let's try to solve it.
So have you talked about this with Comptroller DiNapoli?
Again, I've been talking to whoever will talk to me and listen to me about this issue since I came into office. So since Tom DiNapoli became comptroller, I've had dozens, if not hundreds, of meetings about all of the different implications of these things and different ideas and potentials and what's been done in other places and what are the factors that are driving us to this.
Okay, so now how about the other mayors of New York State? Obviously, if it's impacting you the way it is, it's impacting them too. Who's got guts?
They all have guts, and they're all great men, and I have the highest respect for all of them. And, you know, all of them we've all been saying the same things, but we're different people, and we say it in different ways, and we have different venues and in different ways we use to be persuasive. But, you know, Mayor Richards has talked about Rochester.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Has talked very eloquently about how cities will go through social and cultural bankruptcy before they reach financial bankruptcy, about how the underlying economic model is broken. Mayor Spano from Yonkers has talked about coming into Yonkers and seeing all of the gimmicks that preceded him and trying to undo that and have an honest discussion about how many, you know, what their actual budget is. And, you know, those are two mayors. I mean, Mayor Jennings and I have spoken as well about this. Matt Ryan is the mayor of Binghamton. We've spoken about his property tax cap. I've talked with county executives and town supervisors and, you know, village officials. This has kind of become my cause celeb, if you will, in that anywhere I go, this is what I talk about. So people know that if they talk to me, they're going to hear a really boring conversation about pensions, about non-manageable costs, about compulsory binding interest arbitration, about all of these budgetary issues that impact cities.
Okay, so you've called on the legislature to reject the Cuomo budget proposal. What do you propose instead?
Well, what I propose instead, and particular when it comes to cities and municipalities, is that there be a discussion convened in a process where everybody gets together and talks about these are the factors that are driving us to insolvency, here are some ideas. And it has to be led by the state, because if you just ask one group of people, for example, if you just ask the public employees to bear the burden, that is first not fair and it is doomed to failure. And if we don't have, this is where political leadership matters, because if you say, well, why aren't the unions doing this, or why aren't the business owners doing this, we need to have political leadership to get everybody to do it, to have a sustainable and meaningful solution where everybody gives up a little so that the people of the state of New York benefit.
Now, there's some interesting politics going on in the state. You have the Democrats, you have the Democratic dissidents, you have the Republicans. How does that affect the way you're doing business?
It doesn't, because as a mayor, you know, there's no Democratic way to pick up trash or no Republican way to plow snow. I'm interested in solving the problem, and I have great relationships with my Democratic state senator, Dave Valesky, and I have a great relationship with my Republican state senator, John DeFrancisco. And what I have found for both of them is that they are willing to help solve problems for the city of Syracuse, regardless of party.
Are you optimistic?
I'm always optimistic, or I wouldn't be a mayor of Syracuse.
How did you get this way? Who influenced you? Was it where you went to school? Was it your parents? I mean, obviously you're a bit of a fighter.
Well, it's a little bit of both, but I had a grandmother who was very active in Democratic politics in Syracuse, and she took me around with her, and it just kind of took off from there. And I'm from a large family, so I learned to scuffle kind of early on in life.
How about gun reforms in your town? We're all talking about guns these days. Anything you have to report to us?
No, you know, I have been an active member of Mayors Against Illegal Guns. I see every day the kind of tragedy that guns bring to my community, my neighborhoods, and my families. I want to congratulate the governor for what he did on gun control. Look, there are too many guns, and in too many places in our country and in our state, it's easier to get a gun than it is a job, and that's a dangerous formula.
And what about his position on making sure that women have the right to choice?
You know, I'm a pro-choice Democrat, and I support the governor in that. I think he's a very strong leader, which is why I think he is the right person to lead us through the crisis of fiscal instability with municipalities.
So what about your reelection? When does that happen? When will you run again?
This year. Well, I'm actually in the midst of it. So I have a campaign manager and soon to have a campaign office, and we're rolling our sleeves up and getting ready for the fight.
Is it a competitive town? Do you think it'll be an easy race or a hard race? What do you make of it?
Well, we've done a lot of great things and great accomplishments in the 4 years that I've been mayor. I've been very fortunate. I've had surrounded myself with some high caliber, excellent people. So we have a lot of good things to talk to the public about. And I enjoy campaigning. I enjoy elections. I enjoy getting out there and talking to people who are concerned about the community. So I'm excited by it. I think I'm going to win. But I never take things for granted. And, you know, somewhere along the line, you learn. You either run unopposed or run scared. So I don't think I'm going to be unopposed, and so I'll be running scared, but knowing that I've got a great team and a great track record to run on.
Your co-chair of the Democratic Party, Keith Wright, have you talked to him at all?
Keith and I have been trading phone calls. He's a terrific co-chair, and there's been a lot of positive things about being co-chair of the state Democratic Party, but none more so than getting to know Keith.
You think that there's a possibility that because you've taken this policy position, which is antithetical to the governor, that you might, in fact, get punished in terms of the way Syracuse is treated?
Look, I don't think so. I think the governor is a professional, and I don't think that he would victimize the people of Syracuse in order to lash out at me. That's just not who I know Andrew Cuomo to be. He has he's a very strong governor. He's a strong leader. I expect he's going to be an excellent caliber candidate next year when he runs for reelection, and I will do whatever I can to help him be reelected, and that includes whatever he'd like me to do.
Our guest on the Capital Connection has been Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, co-chair of the New York State Democratic Party, and if I may say so, a very gutsy and convincing lady. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Alan. I appreciate it.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.